start out just by saying that the Division for Church and Society has this pamphlet that was passed out last week, Towards Sufficient Sustainable Livelihood for All. And this is a political pamphlet. And that this spells out in great detail the committee's perspective on the way Christians should respond to many phases of the political world. And in the back of it, there's a question and answer thing that you fill out and send into them to see. This is a rough draft. Only it's not very rough. It's a pretty polished draft. And these are available somewhere around the village. I don't know where.
I think I saw one of those in the bookstore. Yeah. Okay. You know, there's some free things.
It's dated March 1998. And Mark, this would be very interesting for you. If we could find one for you. It's a Division for Church and Society, the ELCA has put out. And it's put out as a rough draft to get everyone's response to see if they want to make any changes in it before they put it out permanently. But it's a marvelous political statement. We'd like to start off this morning by, again, giving a definition of politics, the science of civil government. This interesting definition in a world that often does not seem very civil. However, we live in a very political world of many countries, and the big question for us Christians is how do we fit in this whole global picture? And Today election day?
Today's election day. That's why we decided to do that today. At least in our state.
Oh, yeah.
Primaries.
The primaries are today.
Did you all vote?
Still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I better not.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you probably are all versed enough in the Bible to realize that Romans 13, 1-8 really speaks to the relationship of Christians to the political structure. And I'll refresh your memory. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do not want to be free from fear of one in authority. Then do what is right, and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but because of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to government. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. Let no debt remain outstanding except a continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. I have to ask you, Mark, you're full-time to the politics?
Well, it's technically part-time, but technically. Sometimes it gets me full-time.
There's some interesting thoughts on this that are worthwhile to look at. To understand Romans 13, there are several different ways to look at this. All Christians agree we should live in peace with the state, as long as the state allows us to live by our religious convictions. And if they take separate ways, then obviously we're expected as Christians to adhere to God's principles and not to a corrupt state. For hundreds of years, however, there have been at least three interpretations of how we're to do this. The first, some Christians believe that the state is so corrupt that Christians should have as little as possible to do with the state, although they should be good citizens. As long as they can do so without compromising their beliefs, they should not work for the government, vote in elections, or serve in the military. Others, number two, believe that God has given the state authority in certain areas and the church authority in others. Christians can be loyal to both and can work for either. They should not, however, confuse the two. In this view, church and state are concerned with two totally different spheres, the spiritual and the physical, and thus complement each other but do not work together. Number three, still others believe that the Christians have a responsibility to make the state better. They can do this politically by electing Christians or other high principle leaders. They can also do this morally by serving as an influence for good in society. In this view, church and state ideally work together for the good of all. And anyone care to comment on these three stances?
Does Jefferson fit in number two, separation of church and state, you know, the Constitution?
I would think so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, would that also describe Luther with kingdom of the right, kingdom of the left, I presume?
Well, you could probably answer that better than I. I didn't know Luther too well.
I'm assuming, well, he had that definite stance.
Mm-hmm.
Kingdom of the right, God, godly kingdom, the kingdom of the left, you know, the left hand of God. Those two hands don't have a lot to do with each other. And I presume that...
Probably Marion would compartment it into hemispheres, wouldn't
he? Marion should be here to comment.
Really?
Yeah, this business about voting for Christians, I'd want to know what else the person stands for besides being a Christian if he's running for office.
Let me toss out one that's in our what's in our election today. We have three candidates running for our what court is it?
Senate?
No, it's a court.
Judicial court. Our Supreme Court.
No, it's not Supreme Court. It's our local court, county court.
Yeah.
And one is an avowed born again Christian. The second is just a nice young man, and the third is they're all attorneys, of course. The third one is a fellow who doesn't proclaim a Christian background, but has spent his entire life working for other people. He just returned from 2 years in Costa Rica.
Ecuador.
Ecuador, working, teaching in a school because he felt he needed to serve people. He took his family and went. So would you vote for the born-again Christian just because he's a Christian? Or would you vote for the person that you thought was going to do the best job? It's a real tricky thing that you can get into.
Luther said, I'd rather vote for a smart Turk than a dumb Christian.
I know a bunch of smart Turks.
But the realm in the middle, the separation, really relieves us as a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can keep my faith and, you know, operate in that faith journey and then don't have to, you know, affect or relate to the government or the political world. And it's can be so comfortable. Like Rome said, you know, that Catholic bishops are always quoted, and because they take stands on poverty and government, so on and so on. He said, where are the Lutheran bishops? Are they ever quoted? Well, we are tend not to be, because we take more of the middle stand. The Catholic bishops will take more of this third stand that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're heard in the world.
Mm-hmm. There's another thing about that, too. They tend to pick and choose what stands, what issues they're going to stand on. We're going to get to that a little bit later, too.
None of these reviews, these three views, advocate rebelling against or refusing to obey the government laws or regulations, unless those laws clearly require you to violate the moral standard revealed by God. Wherever we find ourselves, we must be responsible citizens as well as responsible Christians. And everyone has to decide themselves what kind of a stance they're going to take. But hopefully, prayer will be a part of their decision-making. I think that it's amazing sometimes how praying on one of these issues, as well as the researching of the issues, can help you make the right choice. Now, what we'd like to do is something a little different this morning. We'd like to...
Let's have each person do their own times. We had to wait
and see how many people we had here to see whether we wanted to divide up into small groups or not. What we brought is a stack of old New York Times newspapers, and what we want you to do is look through the newspaper, pick out some item there that seems to produce an impact on you, and so that you can look at it from the standpoint of how, as a Christian, should you respond to this particular issue. And then I think it'd be better if we did it three groups, three people.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to argue with each other?
Yeah. That way.
All right. No husbands and wives together, however.
Okay. I knew that would happen.
Well, there's only one thing I don't want to talk about, and that's Monica
right.
Lewinsky.
That's fair.
Sorry, I'm sick to death of that woman.
All in favor say
aye. I'm not usually down on women, but...
No offense, Monica, but...
Now, the nice thing about these is that they're made. So they're not really current issues. So you're going to have to figure out an issue that... speaks to you.
Or more global.
More global.
Okay.
The things we want to get out of it are, why is this important to you? And then what? Then we'll come back. We have a lot more questions to deal with it. So help yourself.
Why don't you just hand it to us?
Okay.
Why? Doesn't really matter.
You guys are going to have to split up a little bit, though, because we've got husbands and wives here.
Together. I didn't bring my glasses. I'm
over here.
Has your group decided on your issue?
Yes.
Okay. You guys are okay?
Well, we've got several.
Okay.
Okay.
Or a couple.
All right. Well, why don't we get back to this? First of all, what issue grabbed you guys?
The New Mexico nuclear dump, I guess, or they're thinking, the government is thinking.
Storage of nuclear waste. Yes.
Storage.
Okay. Storage of nuclear waste. So that's a state issue or a national issue?
Probably both.
I think it's a little of both. Could be almost international, couldn't it?
Yes,
I, what I did here was, I did a, can you all see this? What I did was the home is probably the thing closest to us, then our community, then our local politics, which might be, and some of these lines will meld for some people. For instance, in our area, Phil and I don't really have anything until we get up here to the county level. That's our first level of government. And that's often the case for a lot of people. Then we have the state, and the national, and the world. And we're citizens of all of it, like it or not. So, storage of nuclear waste. All right. Second group.
Well, you can hardly separate that from the nuclear matter, even
what
the
to
Afghanistan.
Do is
yeah,
and
the test in India, too, we were looking at. For the,
that's your issue. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay.
Your
issue
is the five nuclear tests in India.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pakistan, too.
What?
Yeah, Pakistan.
Yeah, in Pakistan.
Pakistan.
You know, their enemies and our.
So let us try to go about.
Going back and forth.
Oh, I'm so glad you got that. That comes, our last thing we want to talk about is the world. Yeah, okay?
Oh, yeah, let's just.
So what did you guys settle on?
We came up with several. We have trouble narrowing.
All right. Since we're a small group.
How about religious fundamentalism here in the state of Israel?
Okay, religious fundamentalism?
Right. Actually, the story was about the mayor of Tel Aviv starting a party to try to get rid of Netanyahu and his fundamentalist government.
So we're talking about religious fundamentalism in Israel?
In politics, religious fundamentalism in politics.
Okay, in politics.
Okay.
All right.
Here and there.
That could be expanded.
Yeah, all right.
Here, the Arab countries, just about any place.
These long words get hard to spell. Manitolism, okay. In politics, okay, and what else?
I had a couple articles on justice coming to the sufferers from the Holocaust. There's a class action suit now.
Okay.
53 years later, that's been entered into.
Justice for Holocaust victims.
And then the other one that I looked at, but we probably don't have to put down, the personal faults and the power of the office. In other words, is the office of president, has it been jettisoned because of all the controversy?
We are talking
power
about
left?
Her.
Huh?
We are talking about her.
We're not talking about her.
Oh,
it's about the power of the office.
And I think the thing we always have to remember is it's not just this administration. This has happened before.
Mark mentioned John F. Kennedy said that there was little power, that when he got there, he was amazed how little power there was. And I think Bush said the same thing. They were couldn't believe it.
Did any of you?
Go ahead, Don.
Well, mine is actually similar to what Mark had, because I had, it's basically the same issue with North Ireland.
Fundamentals of the North Ireland.
Yeah, religious.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that one. Old Lake does take it out of one's knees. So that one could go in several different areas. Okay,
we
got number one.
Okay. Well, we'd like to start by asking a question. How do we best orient ourselves to local politics and national politics, and how much should we be involved? We're talking about, from our Christian perspective,
be informed. I mean, know what the issues are, not just the sort of the emotional parts of it. You get what the issues are, instead of just 15-second sound bites or something on all the issues.
What's the best way to do that, Arlie?
Just if they have debates, fine. If they have printed statements, the newspapers. Mm-hmm. I'm talking the local level.
Could almost always trust the League of Women Voters.
Mm-hmm. League of Women Voters, fine. Right.
Yeah,
well,
I just think
there is a various parts of the brain, and one is the thinking part, and in politics or the political scene, we often take the reactive part of the brain, and I think the churches, you know, forums and so on, can hold the thinking sessions and debate sessions so people can think about what's going on rather than always reacting, because the paper seems to be, the media seems to entice reaction rather than thinking. And I think forums, not saying this is the way you vote, but let's look at all the sides so we can think about this issue and then listen to other people. I think that's a role of the church that could be really, here in our society.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to augment what you said by using an example in our church on Mercer Island. We were captivated by the appearance of a pastor to call. Didn't look behind to see, and developed two consecutive disasters. One was an ego problem, which would not mesh in our church, and the other was an alcohol problem, which people in the call committee refused to do anything other than just look at the veneer of the person. Whereas you're talking about not just persons, but issues or candidates. And that trying to learn as much as we can to make really informed judgments is a prerogative of all citizens, and we may be more highly motivated if a Christian.
The ideal time, of course, to do that is when it's not hot.
That's right.
Although people will mostly come out when it's hot.
Well, it's in any issue.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's not directly affecting you, you pretty much pass it off. I mean, like the nuclear waste in New Mexico, boy, if I were living near Carlsbad and there's 200 wells within a drilling distance of that dump site, I'd be pretty upset if my home was there. But see, it doesn't directly affect me.
Not in my backyard.
Cancer, yeah, NIMBY, you know, and all the other implications of that. So
that would affect a lot of the tourists too.
Mm-hmm. But I should be interested.
Suggest perhaps even a little more proactive approach to it.
Mark, can you?
I think it's important to look for ways you can get involved. I think it's good to study issues. It's certainly good to have sessions at church, and it's certainly a fundamental duty is to try to be informed on issues in terms of reading about them and then participating when it comes time to vote. But I know back home, my admonition to folks is look for ways to get involved in your community, because there are a host of ways you can get involved in issues that concern you, whether it's your neighborhood, because in our community we happen to have a historic preservation area that was concerned about some older homes being endangered, so a group of neighbors got together and petitioned the city council to have it downzoned, and then started a process of having it designated as the historic district on the National Register, which has now been done. Whether it be something in your neighborhood because you sense your neighborhood is changing and you want to make sure that it's strengthened, or whether it's the kind of a situation where maybe there isn't enough political organization. In our area, we have what are called township governments below the level of county. There's been considerable amount of energy and a little bit of light shed on the townships as a result of citizens groups getting involved and questioning the continued validity of the township government. There are a lot of ways to get involved, and back home for each of you, I'd suggest talking to some of your local elected officials, because most communities have boards and commissions you can serve on. In our area, we literally have dozens of them that range everything from planning to historic preservation to how you dispose of a waste product. And each of those need good people to serve. Mm-hmm. Find something you're interested in and get in touch with some of your local elected officials, and that's a good entry-level way of getting involved in the business of being in a democracy, and to me that's very important. It's also important that it not just become a single issue type thing. One of the things that I think is a real bane of politics today are the single issue fund. The people, frequently religious fundamentalists, who have just a single issue that they're campaigning around, who get involved for that issue and make an inordinate amount of mischief for good government because they're so focused on that issue that everything else is forgotten. And so I would strongly encourage the concept of looking for ways that you can get involved back home in areas that interest you, and just fuel that kind of grassroots participation by means of boards, commissions, even neighborhood organizations.
Have any of you, any of the rest of you, experienced a situation where the fundamentalists are running for political office in a very organized way, in that they are becoming precinct committeemen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's been very interesting to us. This happened. They turned out to be fairly ineffective and were only served one term. But it was a concentrated effort on the part of one church. And they got their people in throughout the county in PCOs, in the political, in the precinct committee officer. And they weren't organized enough to be able to affect much, but it was an effort on their part to do that.
We had a race just across the river in Bettendorf, Iowa. There's been an ongoing battle over the last 3 years for Planned Parenthood to locate a clinic in Bettendorf. And Bettendorf is sort of a bedroom suburb of the Quad Cities. It's very quiet, upper income area. And the response to this proposed Planned Parenthood coming in from the pro-life forces was just overwhelming. There's a woman, state representative, actually she's a state senator by the name of Maggie Tinsman, who's a very progressive woman and very responsible, good government person, who happens to be a Republican, by the way, who was targeted by the pro-life people because she was viewed as being not sufficiently pure on the issue. And they went after her, hammer and tong, ran a ban against her. There's a certain irony in that, given the fact that you'd think that the woman would be the preferred candidate on issues of reproductive choice, but of course that's not the way the pro-life folks saw it. This guy was very well-heeled, very, very well-financed, he was an independently pretty well-to-do businessman, and he ran for the office and came within a whisker of defeating her on that single issue.
Yeah.
Now, she's a state official as opposed to local, but that single issue block can be extremely powerful, and you can lose an awful lot of good people in government, as we almost did with this woman, by virtue of that concentrated effort. And I really do think it's a pernicious force in our society today, without speaking on the subject of abortion rights, that you know, the whole concept of single issue religious fanaticism today is, to me, one of the great worries that we in politics have to be concerned about, and we're all in politics one way or another.
In our area, the threat is the tree huggers, the environmental conservatives.
The environmental extremists.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And what do you call them? The what?
The tree huggers.
Tree
huggers.
Tree huggers.
Gotcha. Yeah. We have that in our
too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to have balance, no matter what. Is number three here is, can you guys see this, or are the lights?
Okay.
Is it okay? Is running for political office a responsible response?
I'd have to say yes.
I'd have to say yes, too, because I did it once.
Well, and keep, consider this. I mean, the society in which we live is a democracy, mm-hmm. and if people don't run for office, if people of faith don't run for office, in the first place, I forget about the faith issue. If you don't run for office in democracy, then who's going to rule? Mm-hmm. You're going to theoretically just have bad people running because all the good people have disqualified themselves.
And it's an interesting process, though, isn't it? Because you really are up for all the pot shots. I don't know how it is in your area, but in our area, Marion and I were talking about this the other day, how we really want heroes, but as soon as we get a hero and we elect them, we start tearing them down the day that they're elected. Mm-hmm. And in campaigns, a lot of good people are not running for office, because it can get vicious.
Well, I think it was one of the Clintons made the observation within a year of when they'd been elected about how, to one of their friends, they didn't make this as a public statement, but of course it got out, that being in the White House was a little bit like having a daily proctoscopic examination.
that's a I'm surprised that none of you have chosen campaign reform as an example.
It wasn't in my paper.
It wasn't in our paper.
Okay, it's not showing up in the papers.
I'm sure
<period.
not.
laughs> Okay, why don't we go on? Is that your turn? Shall we go on to questions?
Just an aside, don't you find it ironic that the people who seem to be most pro-choice are male? I've always...
Is that right?
Well, the people running all the national organizations are
male.
This is something that's very dear to my heart. As a nurse practitioner, I did women's health for 15 years.
Yeah.
And it was not, don't get me started. Okay. Are there issues the Christian should avoid?
I don't think so. I just see that off the top of my head. Why? What do you mean avoid?
That you shouldn't get involved in.
You mean like homosexuality or something?
Like anything. Yeah. Like, are there issues that we should not get involved in?
Bigotry.
What was that?
Bigotry.
We can call them a task.
What would they be?
I don't know. That's the thing. Is there anything that we should avoid?
Well, are we at an issue for Christians?
No.
Because we're Christian?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can we use that as an excuse? The fact that we're a Christian, we can't get involved in that.
Spanaway, where I'm from, is a outside the city of Tacoma. It's a city. And the whole school election, of
That's
course,
your
was on and on and on. And I got very involved in that. And I got telephone calls. Well, my philosophy is, as a pastor, if I'm going to live in a community, I need to be not just a pastor, but a citizen. And I need to do what I can in the community. I'm not just up there with my collar on Sunday morning. And I got phone calls, and I would say, what is your... Well, are you a reverend? Yes, I am a reverend. Well, why don't you keep your nose in your business, in the church, and let the community do their thing? And I said, excuse me, who is this? Well, I don't care to give you my name. Well, the first time I got this, that really disturbed me. And then I thought about this. And the next time I said, oh, what is your name? That was my first thing. I don't care to give my name. Well, I said, I'm sorry, you know who I am. I don't know who you are. I can't carry on a conversation with you. And but it was really hot. Now today we have schools in that area. I didn't do this all by myself. We have schools in that area. We bought property because these things began to pass that has saved the Bethel School District millions of dollars.
Yeah, this
and
is
despite the fact, and I've never been sorry that I did that.
As Christian individuals, we can do whatever we want, but how about when our pastor speaks up on a thing? That's when churches can get really excited.
My congregation accepted that.
And, it did.
And every time we had a school election, it was in the bulletin. All I said was, I had the famous line, don't forget to vote.
Right.
It's extremely important. If you really don't know how to vote, see me. I would put that in there and sort of put a little humor, and nobody ever came to see me.
Of course, we have this thing that a certain number of people don't vote, your thing is invalidated. You have to have a super majority. And so you have to come, I mean, no matter how you vote.
You have to have enough people.
You got to have enough people or it doesn't amount to anything.
And then a 60% majority.
Yeah.
In Oregon, I think it's 50% right now.
But it's still tough to get sometimes.
They said they would not accept the passage if there weren't 50% of
the voters. Respond to the pastor in the pulpit on social issues, I think my own feeling is that there's nothing wrong with that, as long as he doesn't do that all the time and never get to the Bible.
Well, the Bible has a little to say on social issues, but that's down here. We're jumping.
Let me just jump in with a thought on that. Is this question really raising one of the fundamental questions that we do raise in this country, which is the separation between church and state? And a good place for referring to that is the pastor in the pulpit. We had a pastor back in the 60s, a wonderful man, a really, you know, Christ-inspired person, who spoke with some regularity and disapproval of the conduct of the war in Vietnam. Now, I happen to agree with him on that subject, but a lot of the members of the congregation did not, and a lot of them left as a result. Now, the question could have been made in that circumstance, was it really the pastor's role to take a stand on that issue? He clearly had resolved in his mind that he should. Or was the answer that the more appropriate role may have been to have underscored the issue, called attention to it, encouraged people to inform themselves on the issue, provided forums to discuss it, but not necessarily taking a stand that God takes this side or God takes that side. Because when we start doing that, especially when we start doing it as a church, and there are some cases where we probably have to do it, when we start doing that as a church, we run into the same area of problem that we're running into with the Right to Life folks, which is basically saying God takes a political stand on this issue. God's a Democrat, God's a Republican, God's pro-life, God's whatever. And that gets to being dangerous.
That really comes down to how do we resolve our ambivalence on issues? Because how do we... Yeah, go ahead.
I think, in preaching, I was one of the few Democrats in the congregation. And we're all Republicans. But, instead of preaching, I've thought of forums when I had issues that I wanted to speak with about. Forums were more appropriate, sure. Then people could respond.
Yes.
And it's not a monologue. You know, if the scriptures speak to that, it's just the word of God. But if you start to get off on the political kind of plane, I think that's more important for the forum.
Yeah.
So people can respond and debate, and you can say, I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. But when you're a monologue, you never say sorry, and then all of a sudden the pulpit is a certain image in the minds of people. Mm-hmm. It's different, and when you're in a literature situation or around the table.
Yeah.
That's a different atmosphere.
Yeah.
My stance is always, when I was in the pulpit, that with issues that had two sides, I had no right to bring up a definitive opinion about that when there was no chance for a response from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
In a forum, just like he said, I would go to bat for whatever I believed in, but I kept it out of the pulpit.
Okay. And as individuals, when you're faced with an issue, again, it's the same kind of thing, get informed. I think that Erling was talking about with political issues. Try and get as much information as you can. The one that always throws us is, you know, voting for judges. I hate voting for judges because you never know anything about them. So we always find ourselves a good ethical lawyer and say, okay, what do we do on this one? But okay, do we have a response?
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. I mean, you go to people who know.
Yeah,
that's the best you can do.
Right, it's a wise thing to do. Yeah.
If you have to pick a doctor, you go to another doctor friend and say, who do I go to?
I'm leaving.
Do we have?
See, the average voter doesn't do that. That's the problem.
No, they pick the name that they most know. And we, in our state, we've had some real doozies. Jake, what's he called? Jake the Mover.
Jake the Mover. Yeah.
And he's always on the ballot.
Mike.
Someday I might Mike the Mover.
Mike the Mover.
Someday I may vote for him just because his name is always there.
He has no platform.
No, he never has his picture in the thing or
he
anything.
He won't allow his picture.
He's always running.
Does he work for Allied?
I don't know. Are you with Allied? We better make sure he's a good guy. Okay, do we have a responsibility to campaign or advance issues or candidates?
Well, of course, I just confessed or said that I advanced issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to every church in the area, every church. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the pastor or the priest, and I encouraged them to urge their people to vote. This is the school issue again. To vote. That's all I said. I feel that this is scriptural. As Christian citizens, we need to vote. It involves our children, our families, our neighbors. What can be more Christian than that?
But you know, most of the public isn't voting.
Right. Well, they get mad. They don't want to vote.
But they don't know how to vote, and so they don't want to take the time to learn.
Right.
One name's like another to them on the ballot.
Sonia just said they feel it doesn't make a difference, and that really is true, isn't it?
I think there's two societies operating. One is the ostrich society, where let's bury our head. And the second is, I think, rage and anger at all the crap that's going on. And we just vote without thought.
Mm-hmm.
I used to vote for myself. But the last couple of elections, I've been out in Arizona now 2 years, and it's hard to get the feel of the grassroots when you first get there. You're moved in, you get your boxes straightened. To reach out and take the energy to get in touch with what's going on, the flow and the pulse, is no excuse, but I just kind of back out and say, well, I'll do that later on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's another thing they need to say, well, it doesn't matter. My vote doesn't matter, so I can just do anything I want to. I'm not proud of that, but I got to be honest. That's kind of what's happening to me. And I have a hunch quite a few people are not too different.
I think you're right.
And you were talking about mobility. People are always moving, so they're never, you know, they're not settled.
Yeah.
And that's a great deal of people in our nation on the move.
I remember on Mercer Island, We had a big park acquisition on the ballot, and it lost by 2 votes out of, you know, 20,000 people.
Turned out okay, because the county had to take care of it, and we probably couldn't have afforded to. So sometimes things work for the better of the whole community.
We got it anyway, but it's just owned by the county.
The county maintains it.
Never can tell.
Yeah.
Never can tell.
We have an interesting thing in our county where more people do vote than the national kind of thing. And a lot of people who live there only part-time or who have weekend places there have changed their voting precincts to our county because they feel they can make a difference there with 15,000 people.
But also, what's their educational level?
High. Way up there. Yeah. Okay, here's my favorite. What is our responsibility on an international scale? What is our responsibility with the Muslim world? This has impacted us a lot, so.
To learn to coexist. I think part of it is.
How do we do that?
First of all, to coexist. But it means a coexist. Everything starts with education. Learning more about the Muslim traditions. Learning more about other religious traditions in general. It doesn't mean you embrace it, but to understand it and to understand some of its precepts. So there's, you know, we sort of have a stereotype view, I think, of the average Muslim as being black-haired, mean-eyed, and even more mean-spirited. You know, an urban terrorist in the making. And yet, if you read even a little bit or learn a little bit about the Muslim faith, you learn that there are a lot of parallels between the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim traditions. In fact, they're all people of the book.
Sure.
I traveled in Israel a few years ago and was amazed at how much emphasis there was placed on all are descended from Abraham, and all are referred to as people of the book.
Yeah.
And some of the teachings of Islam are very much in line with some of our Christian teachings in terms of the importance of coexistence. The whole business of jihad is kind of like the Muslims' answer to our own crusades, where we take and put the worst possible construction on what Christ taught and what St. Paul wrote, and then go out and act accordingly. And that's kind of what they've done with Muhammad. But I think we have to learn more about that and provide a society that embraces some of the aspects of it. I also think we have to quit demonizing all of the Arab countries. That doesn't mean we go out of our way to kowtow to these Arab fundamentalist states any more than the Israeli fundamentalist state. I think both of them need to be chastened because they're diplomatically irresponsible and they're politically reckless. But I do think that we need to deal with the responsible Arab states just as if they were Christian states.
An experience I had in Pakistan. I was sent to a medical meeting. And I stayed at a hotel where there was only one other guest. And when we went to breakfast, we sat together. He was a Pakistani lawyer. And he found out I was from the United States. And he immediately attacked me as being someone who was standing in the way of Pakistan with developing a nuclear weapon. And why should I, as an American citizen, not want Pakistan to rise up to the level of defense capabilities that the United States had? Mm-hmm. Why did we want to suppress? Well, he was not interested at all in my reasons, nor was he interested in the fact that I had no particular say in the matter at all. And how did he know whether I agreed with my country for one thing, as a citizen? I finally got him, you know, whenever you argue with someone, if you let them totally vent their entire thing, then the pendulum swings up your way and you've got a little bit of momentum. So I allowed that. But he was not interested in the fact that I didn't make the decisions for my country.
You said to him, you seem to be a little concerned.
Am I hearing you?
Do you feel that the Muslim world has any effect on our world at this point in time. Okay, anytime you step on an international airplane, this is a thought that goes through your mind. And I'm sorry, but you know, this is the reality. One of the biggest problems I think we have is education is critical on the part of all Americans to learn more about the Muslim world, but the education in the Muslim world is even more critical, and I'm not sure how we affect that. What's happening with the, what would you call it, the demonization of the people who are the radicals in the Muslim world is that most of them are very poorly educated. The whole Taliban came out of the refugee camps that we worked with. And they were young men who were taught by corrupt mullahs in the first place, who really didn't know the Quran. And so their whole understanding is jihad, which means if you're killed in battle, you go directly to heaven. So what have you got to lose? So we're dealing with situations which are going to have ripples into our world, whether we like it or not. Because they do now have weapons of destruction, which are pretty grim.
Are there more of them than there are of us?
There will be within a very short period of time. What other international things are of concern to us?
Hunger.
Population.
Yeah. Well, the article we were reading here on the test, you know, Clinton proposes a sanction on India, but the economics, the United States said, the industry said, no. We will be hurt more than India will. So don't put out sanctions because our economy needs to blossom.
Well, so, there's always the argument about are sanctions effective or not.
That's right. But, you know, we're relating to our economy, not, you know, India.
Okay, now one other big international thing that's here. Martin stands up and says, well, the Dow is... We talk about the Dow at Holden Village. I mean, economics, world economics are...
That's what we're... Yeah.
Erling probably can talk to that one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we are no longer unto ourselves.
No.
At all.
Well, you know, it was interesting. The church, last April, right, sent out a sheet because our retirement fund went down a little bit, see. And then they said, oh, you know, somebody asked the question, why? Well, you have been making money on Japan and the East for years and years and years, and the international fund went down, now you are losing money. Like, oh, it's not just national. We all know that. But it's international. All of a sudden, the Dow is reflecting that. We're related to Russia and Japan and Korea and, you know.
Who in this room a year ago, or I don't know the time frame, would have known anything about the financial trends in Asia?
Who cared?
Yeah.
And yet today we all know that Japan's in trouble, Indonesia's in trouble, you know, all the rest of the Asians, and my goodness, talk about a global village.
On the economic level, how many of you have mutual funds?
Yeah.
How many of you know what your mutual fund invests in? Good. I don't.
I
know. I'm sure that there's some tobacco money in there, which will probably make me very angry.
But
oh,
that's
it's hard being so responsible. It's such a job.
It's hard work.
It really is hard work. Okay, do politics affect social issues?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Of course.
Does that go both ways, though, doesn't it?
Yes.
They are social issues.
Yeah.
In politics, is the interrelationship of people and how they accomplish goals or objectives or solve problems. That's what social issues are. They're the synonymous.
One and the same, then.
Okay, now, as Christian citizens of the world, how are you going to act when you go home? You don't have to answer that.
Mark, I'd like to ask you a question. Can you think of any times in office where you had to make a very pointed decision to whether to go with your Christian belief and principles or go with the expedient?
What is his office?
He's a mayor.
Oh, my word.
Is the mayor of a village?
No, city.
Okay.
Well, I don't, Phil, I'm not sure I put it quite that black and white a situation. It's more of a shade of gray. Yeah. And that's probably the thing I find more and more as I'm involved in politics over a period of years, is that most issues are not the simple issues of right versus wrong. And there would be some things like Hitler's attitude towards the Jews, which are clearly black and white issues, but generally we got a lot of shades of gray. And one issue we've been concerned with over the last 7 years, seems like going on 70, is riverboat gambling.
Oh, yeah.
Because in Illinois and Iowa, that's been a great revenue source for a community. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking earlier, Rock Island went through some real economic upheavals in the 1980s with the Reagan recession that just knocked the bottom out of our economy locally and cost about 20,000 jobs in our metropolitan area. And I'm talking about well-paying manufacturing jobs, which had a significant adverse impact on our local economic base. So we had to figure out new ways to generate revenues just to pay for basic city services. And riverboat gaming was a means of doing that. We pushed for riverboat gaming. And I found myself in the uncomfortable position a number of times over the last few years having to serve as an advocate for that issue. We have a very responsible Midwest-based developer, not one of the Las Vegas operators. He runs a very good quality operation that invests in the community rather than just in his own operation. So those things are all good, but I'm still troubled in my mind by the fact that there are those people who do not gamble responsibly. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, we're serving as an accessory for that because we're giving them the place to play. Now, what's the Christian's role in that? On one hand, your Christian decision should say, we have to provide for the basic services that allow for a sound and healthy economy and allow us to support those social services that are necessary. This is a revenue source that allows that to be done. It's going to be in the area anyway. You're simply writing off an opportunity if you don't pursue it. Versus on the other hand, yes, but there are those who are going to use it improperly and are going to hurt themselves and their families as a result of it. And so the sort of the compromise that I've worked towards is serving as an advocate for it, using those dollars to create other types of jobs rather than making it a main industry, and then trying to assure that some of those dollars can be earmarked for helping the people who abuse it. So, you know, you have those kinds of issues you have to deal with. Frankly, most instances you have to reconcile yourself to having to make a compromise that's in keeping with your conscience. Yeah. That's the nature of politics.
You know, when I was first in the ministry, things were so simple, they were black and white. And it's the warriors I got out there, the broader my theology got, and it's like Mark says, life
things were never black
is
and white.
Great.
No, but our seeing it at our different ages is that's
Well, the fact of it is, the more you know, the more you realize it isn't black and white.
Right.
Yeah. Things usually look black and white when you just see them at a case of first impression, mm-hmm. and then you look at them more closely and you realize how complicated. But I want to add one other thing that I really think is important to this whole discussion. And I think one of the reasons there's so much cynicism in the public today is because of the fact that we do receive so much bad press, so much, we do hear so many negative things, that we lose sight of the decency of those people who serve the public and of our fellow citizens who are willing to get involved.
Right. Right.
And I'm not saying that with any kind of comment towards myself. I'm saying that with regard to when I go to Washington and lobby our congressmen and senators on issues, they work darn long hours, and by and large are pretty decent people, very intelligent people, and pretty decent committed folks. Right down to City Hall, my fellow aldermen on the City Council, you know, they're really pretty committed people. I look at those people and I realize there's a future for democracy, and the grounds for cynicism really is fueled by our own apathy. Democracy's no better than the citizens who make it out.
That's right.
So what I would encourage us to do would be to look at trying to encourage those habits of good citizenship, which include being involved, as I mentioned earlier, trying to understand the affairs of your community, trying to be civil with your neighbor, and suppressing the tendency to be cynical.
think there's another, a very practical thing which you brought up because of the media, and that is to demand that our media be responsible.
Easier said than done.
It's easier said than done, but we can still keep working on it. We can't give up on it, because otherwise it'll just go worse.
But you make a good point, and I tell you what you can do to help your media in that direction is to point out to them how their bread is buttered by what they can. In our area, we have a local newspaper that depends very heavily on our city's support, because most of its readership is located there. So when they started piling on with crime stories a few years ago, just wallowing in it, talking about high crime and exaggerating the reality of the situation, we said, do you want to scare off your readers? Mm-hmm. No, you're going to not only alienate your readers, but you're going to drive people out of the city, and there goes your readership base.
Well, especially,
and said, we've got a lot of good things to report, too, and then we fed them the good stories, and it's amazing how they've just kind of gradually turned around. Last weekend, they were one of the principal sponsors of a Grand Prix road race downtown that they spent big bucks on, talked for days ahead of time about this great event that was going on in the downtown, really gave people a good feeling about the community. So you have to chasten them,
yes,
but you also have to give them the other side, give them the stories about the positives in your community.
The thing, too, is that the statistics for the awful things really are going down, whether they want to look at it or not, and the media is going up in reporting them. One book I would like to recommend to any of you who are interested in politics under duress is there's a new, I'm just finishing it, except I'm afraid to finish it because I know he's going to get killed. It's a new biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and it's called Saints and Sinners. And it is absolutely marvelous in giving you this real portrayal of Germany during the 40s and Bonhoeffer's stand, which was, of course, against the Nazi government. And you really get the sense of how government and politics can really get skewed way out of whack. Good book.
And I think he was the one who made the statement about when they came for the Jews, I didn't get involved because it didn't affect me. And when they came for...
No, was Niemöller.
That was Niemöller. Who also got killed.
The point, he was killed also. But the point of that is, I think, well taken. And that is that whatever happens, as Jesus put it, you know, whatever happens to the least of these happens to me.
But, Bonhoeffer went back to Germany to kill Hitler.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know,
the whole plot is in this book.
He would have been saved the United States. He was at Union.
He was at Union.
Yeah, and he went back, and his motive was to kill Hitler.
Well, he was going to help his brother-in-law, who was the one who was the instigator.
Yeah.
But it's a fabulous book if you really want to get a really good vision of what can happen.
Separation.
Folks, we're only 10 minutes over today. We're doing better.
Yeah, right down there.
Thank you all. It was,
Before you go, I'm trying to, my memory fails me sometimes. There's a quote, and all I can think of is that I want to remember it. And it ends up, when good men do nothing. Now, what's the first part of that?
Yes, all that needs to be done for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing.
Oh, maybe that's it. Thank you.
Edmund Burke.
Okay. Yes.
Very good.
Remember to always stay restless Christians. Keep stirring the pot.